Welcome back to Game Brain, a podcast about board games and our gaming group. In this episode, we are going to reveal our best games of 2023.
Bam, bam, bam. Sorry, I got to do Paul.
No, good representation.
So loud.
Got to do it.
Well, I am. Today, we have a hosting quadfecta, I would say, with Matt, Tom, Ben, and myself, Trey, also. Now, while I am certainly not the perfect host, together, the four of us, we'd be able to create the perfect host.
We form Voltron.
We are, hosting in the Voltron. Aggregate, we will form the perfect host.
Yeah, I feel that way. I feel, based off this like amazing start, I really feel like the Voltron has been assembled.
I was doing a Moneyball thing.
Is that what you're trying to do?
Yes, I'm trying to do Moneyball thing. Speaking of getting on base, Matt, you've got an anniversary coming up?
Yeah, my wedding anniversary. I didn't know we were getting so personal. Yeah, my wedding anniversary is the eighth wedding anniversary is in a couple days.
And will the prostate surgery be before or immediately after that? Because I know
prostate
it's
prostate surgery. What
tell me about your first pet.
We're just getting very personal right now.
Oh,
we're just getting deeply personal.
What was it like when your first pet died?
When I had kids, it was absolutely celebratory.
Oh, okay.
We were counting the seconds on all of our animals to die once the children were born.
Love Speaking it. Of walking a lot, how are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing pretty good, Trey. Thanks for asking, man. I'm doing pretty good.
See, that was a reference to Tom walks every morning.
Tom walks every morning. He does. He takes beach walks. Though I haven't last week. It was too cold. I was just freezing.
It was 50 degrees.
Meanwhile, it's 5 degrees in the country.
Well, I walk barefoot in the sand, in the water, and that gets really, really, really cold. That is, and I'm also walking at like 6:15, 6:20 in the morning.
You can do it all day.
I probably could.
Surf booties.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Yeah.
See, Ben, I feel like you're our 5-tool veteran free agent that we've brought in, the real pro.
He's really going Moneyball.
Yeah, he's really sticking with this metaphor. Going.
I brought my Wondery sweatshirt to, but I'm excited.
That's why I was the walk.
Oh my God. Wait, do I get a personal question?
No, I wasn't trying to be too personal. I was actually saying you're our 5-tool.
Okay,
you can do everything. Professional podcaster.
How's your tool been lately?
The room ringer of our group.
Okay. Well, yes. Thank you. It feels nice to be that. I guess it's nice. It is nice.
And you're gonna be away for a little while, right? You're doing a little traveling.
I'm just doing a quick trip. I'm going
road
to.
I'm gonna walk
in the sands through the ocean to New York, and I'm really excited. I'm going next week. I'm gonna go for a week because my boyfriend is directing a musical out there in New Jersey at the Paper Mill Playhouse. So I'm gonna go to see the opening of that
at the Paper Mill.
At the Paper Mill, so
know it well.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Everyone should buy tickets if you're in New Jersey. Go see After Midnight, and
we have a fairly decent sized audience from New Jersey, actually.
Good.
Yeah.
We'd love that.
Yeah. All my Hightstown people, all my Freehold people, you get going. Get there. Make it to the Paper Mill.
So I'll be traveling out there. Hopefully get some games in when I'm on the East Coast. It's always a little harder, but, I try my best. I'm trying to convert people out there in my high school friends and some gamers, all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Good times.
That's what you do.
Yeah, but I'll be gone for about a week, but I'll be back. I'll be back, guys. Cool. Don't worry.
Awesome.
All right. Like I said before, this is our best of 2023 episode. I feel like we're getting at it kind of like a little late.
Yeah, most people try to do their 2020 best of 2023s in the year of the Lord 2023, but we say nay. We buck that system.
No.
And we say, give us a little bit more time to play a few more games because, you know what? Honestly, a lot of gaming often happens, not for me personally, but a lot of gaming for a lot of people happens during that Christmassy period when everything's shut down. And that seems like you get a little more info about the best games of the year, so we can give you really a better chance at a list that isn't going to just be completely thrown out by the middle of the year.
Ours is the only list that can include some of the releases on December 29th, 30th, and 31st.
Yeah. That's right.
My top three came out on those days.
There you go. Yeah, right,
and we would have missed those.
Only here. Yeah. Only here will you.
I feel great about us.
So how are we doing it, Trey? What is what's the system that we went with this year?
Well, I think what I want to do, I was going to go into my actual, methodology.
Oh, yes.
In determining our top games. But
that's interesting because that's what he
asked. We want to cover the contest.
Yes, we just do the contest. So, about a month ago, we mentioned that we were going to be doing a brief little contest. The lovely people.
In honor of our 200th episode.
In honor of our 200th
episode. That's right.
The lovely folk at Elephant Laboratories offered to gift a wonderful, brand new, fresh off the Kickstarter boat copy of Soul Last Days of a Star.
Love it.
To the winner of our contest. And we got a lot of entries. The contest was to tell us your most memorable gaming experience since our podcast started in 2019.
In a paragraph.
In a paragraph or
in a
two.
Paragraph.
Now, I will
thanks
say,
thanks to everyone who wrote novellas.
I respect how much the game brain listeners game brained this contest.
Yes.
Because many of them gave us multiple options for stories.
It was a choose your own adventure format.
A lot of them went like, just novels. Just novels.
Yeah.
10 pages. And I respect it. I reread them all. They were wonderful. But we did try to stick with ones that I didn't want to just go with one. I would give the winner to somebody that just like straight up broke the rules. Because we were a little bit clear on like, let's keep it to a paragraph or two.
I mean, a friend of ours who has been on this podcast submitted.
Cross the line, mate.
That was, we actually legally couldn't read that one, Mike.
Mike. Yes.
That was against the rules.
Mike, I don't know, what was it? Did we say, because he's not on the podcast, so I think technically speaking he could, but don't worry, he didn't win.
Actually never going to let him play my copy now because of that. He'll never play Soul.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're bitter.
Oh, wow. Well, then I would have to deny him as well. I'm good with that. I'll deny Mike that.
Sorry, Mike.
Yeah. I don't even
cross the line.
Mike is banned.
I got
crossed Mike. The line. He crossed the line.
Mike
crossed
got banned.
Line, I got no beef in this, and yet I will never let him play my copy of Soul.
Ever. I won't even look Soul. At it. I will hide it. I will take it to a different location every
done.
Time you come over.
But it's not a soldier.
We got somewhere that, between like 30 and 40 entries. And,
thank you.
Yeah, which was really great. You know, like I was pretty happy with that. And people really put work into these.
Oh, can I just say, like, sometimes, you know, you get to 200 plus episodes, it can be a grind. Like anything, even if you love it, it can be a grind, right? Writing, we love it. It can be a grind, right? And this sort of thing, reading all of those entries put such wind in my sails. It was just so uplifting. It was just so, it was really meaningful to me reading them. And I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. We have, after 200 episodes, I feel like your podcast has sifted out all the people that maybe weren't really there for the right reasons or really into it, or who were sort of maybe had a toe in the hobby and dip. Like now it's just lifers.
Yes,
most
right.
of the people that listen to
it's
our
like
podcast.
It's like taking a pre-med class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no, like everybody's been filtered out.
We're like a 300 level podcast it now. It's small.
It is hardcore gamers and long haul truckers.
We're not saying we're gatekeepers
because of the length of our podcast.
Anyone who is interested in something that's excessive. I will say also, what was I going to say? I don't know what I was going to say.
I was talking about how uplifting.
Uplifting. Actually, what was really cool from the people who responded was, to me, the geographic breadth of
all over the world.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Which all over I'm the world. Like, I that always just surprises me still.
Yeah.
You know that like that like here we are, the four of us, we're sitting here on a Sunday night at Tom's office in front of a little carton of banana cake that I brought in to try to celebrate this in some sort
which
of way.
Which Matt says was
delicious.
Amazing.
But it's absolutely. Just like this super moist. Casual, low, it's like this is like a low key kind of thing. And that like, you know, I'm still always in awe that this gets, you know, broadcast. There are people off in Norway listening. And
well, our podcast host sent us a thing this year saying that we were in the top 5% of all of their podcasts and then did breakdowns where it told...
It's like 40% America, 60% everywhere else.
Everywhere else. Yeah. And like,
I would never have guessed that.
40% America, 25% Europe, something like
big
that.
Big pockets in places like Melbourne, Australia.
Yep.
You know, like Australia in general, but Melbourne in particular.
Southeast Asia?
Really,
we had a lot of listeners in Southeast Asia.
It was crazy.
Have I been pronouncing Melbourne wrong all this time?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how they pronounce it. But
kind of like Nolans.
Not a big bluey watcher.
Wow. Too bad Paul isn't here.
Look, if you're one of the many Melbourne listeners and you feel that I'm incorrect, by all means, there is nothing we love better than doing a correction
it's,
of
it's probably me that aired.
Look out, there comes a razor bick. A friend of mine from Australia said the most Australian sentence you could say is to scream, look out, here comes a razor bick.
I don't know what a razor bick is.
Shout that out all the time. It's just one of their, you know, scary pigs that live there. They have scary pigs.
Razorback.
A razorback.
Yeah, well, they have those in Arkansas.
Well, slow down, buddy.
Okay. You know, all right.
And let's, we justify a lot of gun ownership.
The point, the point is that we actually have a really broad audience across the entire world, and it was awesome to hear letters and stories from people all over the world. It was amazing.
Yeah, and we would love to read them all, but we won't. We will read the winner. And we will be notifying the winner.
Do you want to start with the one from Taylor Swift, friend of the podcast?
So Tay Tay did send in, you know, she could barely whittle it down to her top three.
Yeah.
Game experiences.
It said something along the lines
Do you want to guess what her number one game was?
Her number one. No, I actually know it. I saw it was Nucleum. I was very surprised.
No, that was for this year. No, overall. Tribune.
Tribune. Oh,
was
yeah.
Expansion, was her number one. Yeah. She said the expansion to Tribune.
But it was the new version.
It was the best.
Taylor's version.
It's over Blood Bowl.
Over Blood Bowl.
Over Blood Bowl. Taylor's version. Now, that's a game I would buy, actually.
All right. We did want to shout out one of the entries because I thought it was really fascinating. And look, we all loved the story. It was a novel. And even if it was shorter, I still think we would have gone with our winner here. But we wanted to shout this one out because, Tom, do you want to give us a breakdown of this
one? Yeah, sure. There's a guy named Cameron who has spent the last 18 months riding a bicycle from the northernmost point of North America, Prudhoe Bay in Alaska, to the southernmost point in South America, which is Ushuaia down in Argentina.
Yeah.
That's like it's over 18,000 miles. And he decided, I'm going to do this on a tandem bike.
And he's by himself.
I'm not putting anybody else on my tandem bike. I'm going to invite people along the way to join me for part of the ride.
However long they want to go.
Was there a sign on his bike? Like, how do people just see a tandem probably and say, like hop on?
You have to stop a lot.
That's true. You're
probably just talking. Be like, anybody want to jump on the bike for a couple hundred miles?
I mean, I think the chloroform pretty much takes care of it. I don't think. No, but it's amazing. And he was talking about how, you know, he's riding with people and they ride a short distance and he got to know people and he brings all these games with them.
See what they want to play at night.
Okay, the chloroform really messing up.
So we should be apologizing to Cameron.
We're sorry because it's actually
and beautiful story. And he was talking about all the games he played with these people that he met along the way. Some people would stay with him for, you know, a couple hours. Some people would travel with him for long periods of time, and so they would get to create a meta with some of the games they were playing.
And Hive was the game that he thinks is the biggest hit among all the people.
You can play it in the rain.
Yeah, you can play it in
those chunky ceramic tiles.
It's two player.
It's two player. It's chess like, so people can grasp it pretty quickly.
It was a really cool story, and we wanted to shout out that he has a website called The Random Tandem, like tandem bike.
I love that.
TANDEM, but The Random Tandem, all one word .com, and you can see his journey, which is pretty cool.
That's very cool. Random Tandem.
Reading about it.
Check it out. That was amazing.
Super awesome.
There were so many great stories, though. Really,
I personally have to say this one is not the winner, but one that I just enjoyed. It actually the one that made me actually kind of chuckle the most. One of the people who submitted a story about playing Agricola. And that there was like a bad rules teach or something. And in the first round, someone had to take like a beggar card. And the person who had to take it was just like, quote, a passionate player. And like someone was basically like, ha, you have to take this card and you're probably going to lose. And the guy just went and like threw the card at the person's feet. He's like really angry.
Gambit style, I believe they described it.
Yeah, just like flicked it across the table, but it landed softly on the guy's cheek and then it fell to the table. And then everyone sat there silently for 2 seconds and then they just kept playing. And like, I love that story because like, while there were very like beautiful, wonderful, moving stories that we received, that one to me was the one that I felt was the most, like, I felt the most connected to. Like, I just felt I could imagine just being at that table and seeing that card flying across the table and then landing softly on someone's cheek. And then we all say, what the hell was that? And just move on.
That was awesome.
I've done worse.
Yeah.
I famously kind of threw a pencil in the middle of a diplomacy match and it actually hit my friend Ariel's earlobe and stuck and dangled from his ear.
Yep.
This is when we were in high school.
Yeah.
Oh. Fortunately, there was a very large glass table between the two of us at that time, but it all worked out in the end. It was not my greatest moment. I was the best man at his wedding.
So. Okay, that's good.
Worked out all right in the end. Hopefully, I've matured. Now I'm only throwing begging cards.
Okay, begging. Either way, I thought that was
last
a fun
year.
Story.
You smashed a beer across the room.
That was for comic effect. That was for comic effect.
Well, that's back
to you, Matt.
Yeah. So to just end this torture for the people who are hoping to win this game here. The winner of the contest is a fellow named Chris C. I'm not going to say last names because last names I didn't ask if I could. And so I'm not going to take that risk. Chris C. And I'm going to read it. We had multiple Chris's. So again, sorry for the disappointment that the other Chris is about to experience. This is Chris C.'s contest winning entry. Got into the hobby around 2009. Agricola is still number one to me. That's not why you're winning, but it didn't hurt.
It didn't hurt.
And over the years, gaming time became scarce. Changed jobs, married, moved, had kids. Not necessarily in that order. Then COVID happened, and the little outside of the house socializing I had left went away. I shifted toward more solo-based gaming, but most of my engagement with the hobby was of the vicarious kind, through reading about games and other people's experiences with them on BGG. The next door neighbor had a kid who was the same age as one of my two kids, so we would often arrange to walk down to the nearby playground so our kids had a little time to safely socialize. Being naturally introverted, I'd try to make some small talk with the neighbor, then retreat to my phone to read about board games. And then one day, when scrolling through a thread on BGG, a user happened to mention where they lived, and it caught my eye because it was the same small city as me. Out of curiosity, I scrolled back up to see their username to see if there's any chance I might recognize them, and it turned out to be my neighbor. It turned out that COVID led to the neighbor getting into the hobby, and since then, we've started gaming together and grown the regular group to four. We alternate hosting, and the time spent commuting can't be beat. Thanks for the years of the podcast, Chris C.
Yeah, sweet.
And that's the dream. Awesome, right? That is the dream, to find out your next door neighbor is a gamer.
I mean, I literally would move my house to next to somebody who loves games.
We almost had that, Matt. We were in the same building. We just didn't know each other yet, but we had an overlap
in the same apartment
building for a few months.
We did.
I mean, we are really fortunate that we're all that, you know, we have so many people that are friends of ours, and we can put together, you know, game. We can put together conventions if we wanted to.
Yeah.
But that's amazing that the person that he was regularly doing these sort of like play dates with the kids, turns out that that person is a gamer also.
I love that. So, Chris.
Yeah.
Congratulations on winning a copy of Soul, Last Days of a Star. I will have Elephant Laboratories. I will tell them what has happened, and we will get you your game as soon as physically possible. And I hope that you play it with your neighbor.
Yeah.
And if you do, send us a picture or something.
Let us know. Absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, congratulations. And thanks again to Elephant Laboratories for helping donate a wonderful copy for our contest.
That's great. It reminds me of that Liza Minnelli song, Ring Them Bells. If you don't know about it, look it up, listen to the lyrics. It's basically the same story, except more a little bit more romantic, but.
Or sort of like, do you like pina coladas?
A little bit,
Escape by Rupert Holmes.
Rupert Holmes. Do you like playing Catan?
And your getting neighbors caught on BGG.
All right. Listen, I feel like a listener right now because I actually don't know what our top five are because
you want us to get to it. Yeah,
I kind of want to know.
I don't know. I want to know everything.
Trey, would you tell us what the methodology is?
Tracy Traceham.
Yes, I'm happy to discuss our methodology. Okay, so here's how
this works. This is a long-distance dedication.
I sent an email to every one of our hosts and co-hosts that's currently involved with the podcast, and people were invited to submit their top three or top five games.
Yep.
So every single game on this list here is somebody's top five. We're going to do more than five. Yep. We're going to talk about more than five. But in order for you to get essentially points from this, it had to be on somebody's top five list. And so all I did was give 5 points for a number one answer all the way down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So if it was your number five, it got 1 point.
Ranked choice voting.
Ranked choice voting. Well, ranked choice like eliminates things.
I guess
you keep going or whatever. But so the game that's going to win for us, that's the one that's going to have the most points from all that we've added up on the list. Don't look yet.
I'm not looking
yet. Okay, in the event of a tie on points, I'm giving it to the game that appeared on the most lists.
Oh, nice.
And if there's still a tie, it is a death match. A death match.
We throw both games against a wall 10 feet away, and the game that loses the fewest pieces.
So let's start out with a really obscure one here. Tied for 16th.
Oh.
16th place.
Tied? 16th place with 1 point.
It's not a game called Tied. It's not a game called Tied.
It's not Tied.
This is our top 16 of the year.
17.
Top 17 of the year, technically.
Technically, okay. But we're gonna move through these bottom ones pretty quickly. Okay, so a big surprise here. This only got a single fifth place vote. Great Western Trail, New Zealand.
That's me. Absurd. That was me who did that.
Is that right?
That's I'm the absurd. Problem. It's me.
I think it just got lost. I think it just was like, it didn't feel new.
It's not, yeah.
But it's the best Great Western Trail. You
know,
I think it is.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
Well, either way, regardless of whether it is or not, I will say I struggled with whether or not this would be. I was having real issues as trainos between my 4, 5, and 6, and I kept on moving them all around because I didn't have enough plays of either of them, and I just wasn't sure. But what I tried to remember of those three games, I tried to remember the feeling I had playing them. You know, because I was trying to be like, well, Great Western Trail was so much fun, but is it sort of like not as new and fresh as maybe this or that, whatever? And I just tried to push that all out, all the academic stuff out, and just say, how did I feel when I played it? And when I played Great Western Trail, New Zealand, the first time, I had so much fun. I loved it. Mm-hmm. And it also restored my faith in Great Western Trail overall, because when I played Great Western Trail, Argentina, I enjoyed it. I own it, but I didn't like love it. It didn't make my heart race the way the original did. And I started to worry like, oh no, if I sort of move past Great Western Trail. But then when I played New Zealand, I was like, oh, this is so fun. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of why I've always loved the original Great Western Trail. And I think it got lost. I think that it's just like the Essen Rush came through and all those big titles came and we just,
well, what's the best GWT to you?
I think original with Railways of the North is the best. And here's the thing. When I was first playing New Zealand, I thought, oh my God, this is it. This is the best one. On multiple plays, I'm starting to be of, and maybe somebody is going to agree with this, I'm starting to be of the opinion that with the selling of the sheep and the shearing of the sheep being two different ways to get money, kind of destroys what was an important balance in the game, which is the idea that the engineer strategy and the builder strategy, that they can all win. Now that there are two sheep strategies that both generate that money and that which is a lot of power in the game, I believe that the balance is a little thrown off and it doesn't quite have as many different strategies as the other games.
Have you played Revised with Rails to the North?
The revised with
the new North? Version of GWT?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I haven't played it either. I have it. We need to play it.
I'm dying to. I love that game. Yeah.
Do you think it'd be true that like this is one of those games that's also maybe just a victim of our scoring system? Because I think it would be on most people's top 10.
Oh, it'd be on. It'd be on my top 10. Right. I don't dislike the game at all. I think it's amazing.
Top 10, it might actually be much higher because it's everybody's 6. Or
that's
7.
Right. So, like, I just wanted to point that out because I think everybody thinks this is a really solid game. It's in the discussion for the
I'm
best.
I'm really glad
Great
that
Western Trail.
I'm really glad I put it on my list.
I mean, it wouldn't
because,
have been on it.
Because I think it's a game that should definitely be represented amongst 17 titles that we're about to go through or however.
And to be clear, I think I've played it 8 or 10 times this year. So it is not a game I dislike at all. That is
I love it. I love it. This actually makes me want to play it some more because I've only played it twice.
It may have just gotten eclipsed by some later games. Not that Eclipse is
I thought you were setting up an Eclipse pun.
Where's he going now?
I think it got 100% Eclipse because when it came out, it was not too long after that. These big names that I'm not going to even say because I guarantee they'll be on our.
But I think we all assume like, oh, this game's going to be one of the games we discuss at the end of the year, and then.
But also, kind of like lives in a space where it is a standalone game. Mm-hmm. But it, I think in a lot of our minds, it kind of lives as an expansion, even though it's not an expansion. I think it's like, it's just another. It's like an 18XX game, you know. It's like, you know, one thing that I struggled with in terms of coming up with lists is, for instance, 1822 PNW is a 2023 game. Uh-huh. Love it. Had so much fun playing it online, etc. But it's like, do I put this on my top 5? Even though I had so much fun, but it's just sort of like it's another 1822. So I think that maybe that there may have been that with Great Western Trail.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's absolutely right. It's going to be hard. Like, there is another game that is very much a new derivation of a classic game that may deserve to be higher than it's going to be on our list simply because it is
we'll see.
A little bit of the same. We'll see.
All right, we spent 5 minutes on number 17.
But it's an important one. Like this,
I just, it was one of mine.
This was like a fluke of the system, I think. Yep. Now we get a little bit weird. We get into the Jordan picks. Tied for 16 with a single fifth place vote. And thank you, Jordan, for making me pronounce this. Inferno, Guelphs, and Ghibellines vie for Tuscany, 1259 to 1261.
Well, he's absolutely
Inferno is it's part of a 3-game series. That's amazing.
I'm not, 4-game.
Not mocking it, but I'm just like, I'm not sure this, like GMT's a little bit, I'm not sure has anybody else played this? So
yes.
I
have played all of the games in the series. I played this one twice. Jordan and I played it together. Levy and Campaign is like absolutely the most exciting thing I think GMT is doing. I'm in the process. I have Plantagenet, their newest game, on my table right now as I'm learning it. I think it's,
is that the fourth in the series?
Yeah.
So this is a great shout out, this is a little bit outside of kind of
He's absolutely right. But... And the Levy and Campaign system is so exciting to me. I just, 2-player games are just absolutely the hardest thing for me to get to the table ever. Yeah. 'Cause it involves the same amount of time commitment for me as a game night, but with just one person. Yeah. And I rarely have more than one game night a week. But Jordan and I have played
this. I need to do this with you.
Yeah. Plantagenet's probably the best starting point. Yeah. Okay. Which often they do, like with coin series, like the easier, simpler ones came later on down the line. But yeah, Nevsky is on.
Is Nevsky the same designers? Or
Nevsky, so it's a series, like coin, and the very first one.
See, I was looking at the designers.
What is it on Yukata or something?
Enrico Acerbi.
Rally the Troops. Sorry. Nevsky's on Rally the Troops, and I played it a bunch there, and it's fantastic.
Cool. Just real quick, I'm going to name the designers. Enrico Acerbi and Volko Runke.
Yeah, Volko Runke, who's the originator of the series as well as the coin series.
He started with Labyrinth back in the day. I think that was his very first design. Yeah,
exactly. All the coin games, yeah. And so this is, and now he's starting to sort of give this off to new designers to come up with their takes on the system, yeah.
Awesome. It's medieval.
It's medieval warfare logistics. It's all about
conscripting,
creating lines that go back to supply lines. You know, it's brilliant. It's absolutely so exciting.
Cool. All right, now we have 3 games tied for 13th. Each of these received a single fourth place vote. We have Bloodstones from Martin Wallace. This is Jordan's number 4,
Marty.
And I'm not sure. Have you played this?
I have it arriving tomorrow, and I think we might be playing it at game night tomorrow.
I played it with Jordan. And I talked about it on the podcast. It was it was way more fun than I was expecting. I was expecting a abstract game where I was just going to get brutalized by Jordan. And I was like, he's excited to play this. I'm in the mood. I'm in the mood for a conflict forward game. Why not? Let's have fun. And it was really fun.
2-6 player asymmetrical Euro war game with domino tiles and a cloth map.
Yep. It's fun.
I'm very, very excited.
It's not one that I would personally buy for my collection, but it was a big surprise for me.
Trey and my buddy Marty, he makes some good games.
Yeah,
Marty makes some good games.
You guys hung out this year.
Martin Wallace? I don't know. I heard about that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We spent Trey especially spent a lot of time with him at BGGCon.
Well, Trey was, I think, abusive towards him.
No, I was the one who was abusive.
Oh, you were abusive. Yeah. Sorry,
Trey threw a pencil.
No, I bought him a bottle of scotch.
You threw a pencil in his pillow. That's right. You did buy him a bottle of scotch. That's great.
That worked.
I'm very excited for Bloodstones. I missed it in 2023. I will be playing for the first time maybe tomorrow night.
Awesome.
Also tied for 13 was Scholars of the South Tigris. We know whose list this is.
Elda! Thank you, Professor.
So I have played half of this, and halfway through the game, my wife called and said, I just tested positive for COVID. Can you come home? And so that was...
And so clearly he played the second half of it.
Is that in the rules? I don't seem to remember that rule.
I played half of this. I think this game is really fascinating.
By the way, you were here when that happened.
What?
Was it here or was it your place?
Remember, we were playing Evacuation.
You were here the last time, you also left early for some. There was another call that came in.
Was there? Yeah, I don't know.
This
is, I think, Shem Phillips, Garfield Games. They do the North-South series.
Yes.
West-East.
Is that what we call the series? What do we call that series?
It's called, I think people call it like the, what's the word for compass directions?
Ordinal.
So there's a word for
cardinal
direction games. Yeah, something like that. Okay. But anyway, they keep getting heavier and heavier. I think this one is fascinating. It's all about translating ancient scrolls. It's, I think it's pretty cool. I still think
it seems like it's in comparison to the other titles of this series. The other titles of the series play in about 2 hours flat, and this one seems a lot longer.
I only it's played half box. Of it, so I don't know. I didn't feel that long to me comparatively. I really, really liked Wayfarers of South Tigers, which came out last year. I think that might be my favorite of his, along with Crusaders and Paladins. But yeah, I don't know. I got to play it more. I love his games. I think they're fascinating.
I really still like Architects of the West.
Sure, Architects is still
Architects is my favorite.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of experience with those games.
Scholars though. Last year, right. I like that one, and I still like Architects, I think. Like, they're always good enough to play. You know what
I mean? Well, it's interesting that he's able to churn out so many interesting games that feel part of, like, the same universe.
Yeah, with little wrinkles and additions.
For sure.
And they're branching out. They're becoming more different as time goes on.
I think if every game
way.
Didn't have the same artist, and I do like the artist, and I know people really love it, I think they sort of lose the eventness of their release.
A little bit.
People just sort of feel like it's the same thing.
That's a really
good
point.
Same game.
Which is unfair, because it's not the same
game. No, and they're absolutely shockingly different, and the mechanics are like, whoa, like really doing some innovative stuff.
Interesting pairing with Great Western Trail, where here's an example where actually kind of the branding of the game has, I think, actually maybe impacted our way of perceiving it.
Yeah. And also, like, if it's almost like Reiner Knizia. It's like, well, he just releases so many. Can they be that good? Like, this guy releases like two games a year, like, and people are just like, and they kind of are really good. Like, I don't feel like people give him the fair shake.
Yeah. And listen, Reiner hit a point where they weren't all great.
Right.
So, you know.
He's back, baby.
He is back.
He's back.
All right. Our final tied for 13, my number 4, Thunder Road Vendetta.
I want to try that.
I really did enjoy that game quite a bit.
Ben, this game is fun forward.
It is.
You talk about fun forward.
Isn't this a remake of like an 80s?
It's like Car Wars.
No.
It's,
you guys were playing.
I thought this
you
was, yeah, it is. Yeah. Restoration Games just makes remakes of all games.
Sure. Yeah. But it's really hearkening back to.
This re-implements Thunder Road from 1986.
Wait a second, are we doing re-implementations?
Yes, but Thunder Road.
A Milton Brad. This is literally their business
model. Okay, but
they
said re-implementation. This isn't just a re-release, rebrand.
No, it's with new minis.
And recognize that Thunder Road was Milton Bradley saying, hey, that Steve Jackson's doing great with Car Wars. Let's do that. So they
that Road Warrior,
they,
that is
they
some movie.
Ripped off... Yep. They ripped off Car Wars. In
either
order
way,
to do this.
When you guys, I saw you guys playing it. I actually think I was playing The Rich and the Good over on this end of the table here, and you guys were playing Thunder Road over here, and you guys were having
who brought that?
Jennifer brought that game. She taught it. She crushed. We had a great time.
Awesome.
It has Euro-y mechanisms, which make me think this isn't just some re-release of a 1980s.
This is what they do. Because they just returned to Dark Tower a few years ago, which is like a big famous silly 80s.
I think it's
thing.
An important
they
do, update.
They take your nostalgia and then they add some modern rules
to
it.
So let me tell you where this fits in with me. Like, this is a dice game that I like because it knows what it is. It is a totally a beer and pretzels game. And I have found, like, I've recommended this for like three different people. Like, it's a go-to game. I haven't gotten it for my relatives yet, but like, this is a game you can totally play with your family. It's a game you can play with a group.
Yeah.
I've recommended it to three different people. And each time
it looks
they
beautiful
came back
on the
and
table.
Said, we had so much fun.
Yeah.
So like,
it looks beautiful on the table. You could play with kids, teenagers. They'd love it.
I mean, I like a Mad Max theme.
Yeah.
It
I'm in on the theme.
It's good.
Let's play it.
It's really good.
Is it roll and move?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay. There's some rolling, but it's more like when you wipe out and crash, and then you roll your dice and then you allocate them. That's the thing. Like, it has some Euro-y things. You roll your dice, then you allocate them to different actions.
Because you have three different cars in the race.
Yeah, and then you can also like control the helicopter type of thing. So like even with when your cars start getting destroyed, you start to be able to like focus your dice on the remaining stuff you have. Yeah. So that's a little bit of kind of a balancing mechanism in itself.
I'm really glad you put that on your list. I'm glad that it didn't disappear because that's a really fun game.
Fun forward game for me. Okay, yeah. Number 12, our first title to make two different lists, Apiary.
Space Bees!
Whose lists are those?
Space Bees. So Apiary appears, this is Paul's number 5 and Elder's number 5.
It was my number 6.
Connie Vogelman is the designer, Stonemaier Games publisher. I've played this once with Ben and Paul, and I had a lovely time. It made me realize I don't play enough just straight up medium weight games, and how sort of relaxing and yet also
fun,
brain taxingly enjoyable they are without being brain melting.
I think the village aspect of it, meaning that the bees age and die, and
it's
you
more
can
like
get
Teo
more
to
bees.
See, I feel like
I guess that's yeah. that's fair as well. Yeah.
Teo bee walking
is a great mechanic. I think it looks great. It's a fun looking game and is a really fun midweight game.
I think it can definitely have some just straight up broken combos like turn one. And you're
Paul,
just like, I think you, yeah, Paul like definitely, we definitely yeah. played Paul a game where Paul just got like a combo that was just like. We could probably just like restart.
It was fun. It was a fun game.
But it's very fun. It's very fun. And I do enjoy the engine building and sort of map, solo map building you're doing.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like MPS to me. It didn't feel like multiplayer solitaire.
Nope.
It felt interactive.
You are competing over these spaces and making these choices.
Yeah, you're looking at the board as much as you're looking at your little player board.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually a little MPS, but the thing is this, that doesn't bother me.
Yeah. It's also
I have no
90
problem
minutes.
With
it's like straight up.
I got a big
minutes.
Problem with it, and it was my number six game. Every time I played it.
This game played very differently at, I think I played it
three
at five.
And four.
I played a three with you, and I played a five with, or either five or six. Can it play
I feel
six?
Like it would be, no, five. Five. I feel just, like it would be very long with five.
No, it wasn't. It was a good. Race. It was like a sprint. Like none of my, right. And that was the thing, is I came out of it thinking like this game may take the same amount of time regardless of play.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know.
Kind of thing. I thought it was really solid. I have nothing bad to say about it. It's just that, like, my top five, I'm more passionate about.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
I don't currently possess a copy of it, and I think I'm going to get it.
Well, yeah. I remember asking if you were, and you said you would. I bought it on the podcast.
I just haven't yet.
I've only played it once.
Since we're celebrating our best games of the year, I'm just going to say the nice things I have to say about it, which is that I had a really nice time playing it.
There you go. Yeah. Sweet.
Number 11. Here's, frankly, to me, another shocker. This only appeared on a single
list.
This
one really chaps my hide.
Paul's number three, Horseless Carriage.
Yeah.
That's absurd. That's
I
absurd.
Would like, I just, I would need more plays of it. I only played it once, and I thought it was really interesting.
This is the February release problem as well.
A little bit, right?
If this had come out in November, I think it's on a lot more lists.
I think
little
also,
bit,
like, Horseless Carriage, to me, I've only played it once, but it reminds me of Los Angeles. And what I say by that is, like, you know, you go to certain cities, you go to New York, you go to Paris, you go to London, you arrive, you see what the city is, you understand what the city is, it all makes sense. Like, oh, I get this city. Right. You come to LA,
it lays
as a tourist,
before you belly out.
And you don't even, you're like, what? Is this a right. city? I don't get it. LA's I don't know, like understand cat. How it works.
Yes.
And so I definitely got the sense with the Horseless Carriage that this is something that you have to play and you have to explore, and it's going to unveil itself to you and open up and blossom for you. But unfortunately, I've only played it once. So I had a good time. I thought it was really interesting. It's on my top 10 of the year, but I need to play it more to get to the blossom stage. That's
I think
all.
There are a few things against it. One, I feel, so there were production issues. There were pieces that they had to reissue and send to you, which they did. They did it. They did it fast. They got it out to you. For a bunch of Dutch people doing things in their garage, they're fantastic. But that did slow down adoption and plays and all that sort of stuff. I also just kind of feel like it is second tier splatter. And the thing about splatter is that second tier splatter is the difference between an 8 and a 10. It's still a great game. But I think that the spatial component of the game, which a lot of splatters play with,
right,
is a solo puzzle that is solvable or fixable or choosable even before you play the game, and there are paths that are kind of That's laid right. out for you.
Yeah, I think the how you lay out your factory thing, it's either like almost too difficult a puzzle to even engage with, or you can do like I did and go on BGG and kind of come in with a layout in mind that I then pursued, which is a form of cheating.
Yeah,
no, it's just a form of meta. That's just a form of learning one person's meta.
I mean, I literally had a photo that I.
That's not
had.
Cheating. That's just trying somebody's strategy, and then
I didn't find that part so much fun. I thought that was daunting. It was a daunting puzzle.
It was a revelation into your character.
Yeah,
I thought that was good.
I'm not convinced this isn't a game that we just haven't played enough. And no fault to those who didn't enjoy enough to give it 30 more plays, but I think it might be one of those games that doesn't open up for 20 or 30 plays.
I think, and maybe, based on the people on our Discord, there's some people on our Discord who played it like so many times, and I think it really probably develops.
I took a poll amongst on our Discord, and I asked 20 people gave me their top three for the year. Horses Carriage is in 5 out of those 20's top three.
Yeah,
it's pretty great.
So, I mean, it's in 20% of our listener base's top three for the year.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people are people who have played it. I think there's one person on our Discord who said they played it 200 or 300 times.
Yeah.
And in fact, they would say it's absolutely top tier. And the meta that comes of it, and the back and forth, and the gamesmanship, and the brinksmanship that starts happening and forming over multiple plays of the game within your group is off the chart.
I think as soon as you start absorbing a lot of the concepts, and you start really, I think it'll open up. There's mechanics in there that, like, I feel like in my one play barely even got to use, but I'm like, oh, but it's there for a reason. I know there's a way to use this, and this just like will be.
And that's why I have no problem with the photo thing. It's like, good, bring in the strongest strategies you find, because I think the game can combat them. I think there are answers to things like that. And I think that's part of the fun.
Yeah, that's just one of those solitary parts of the thing. I was so impressed by this game, as I often am with splatters. Like, splatters are always fascinating. And I think, like, what they're doing with creating a market, like how they simulated a market that wants different things.
Yes.
And you're providing different, you're not just providing trucks and sports cars and passenger cars. It's just like, you have to respond to the market in terms of what they
and
want
forecast.
In terms of speed and safety and these other features.
Yeah.
And like, that was incredibly sophisticated.
The tech tree in the game that is a very different way of looking at a tech tree.
And the way turn order decides what techs you have access
but
to
also
is so
like
cool.
Seeing what techs are going to be developed. So you are like thinking, oh, I want to develop. I see that there's like an opening in the market in this area, and how can I get there? Well, I can see that this technology is probably the thing the market's going to want next. So there was like really cool stuff.
There's also a lot of humor in the game that I feel like is a hallmark of splatter games. Like, I think there's a lot of really funny table moments of like, guys, nobody cares about breaks in this world. Like, guys, we are all about
you hop out when you're done.
Spoken. Yeah, look, we have invented the door. Everybody likes doors. Brakes, not important. Nobody cares about brakes this year.
Look, is it paint or is it brakes? Clearly, it's paint. There's no question about
the
it.
The order that the things start getting like prioritized becomes really comical.
Yeah, listen, I played it. I played it 5 times this year. I love it. It's in my top 10. It's just not in my top 5.
It just needs more plays, I think. For me. I need more plays of it.
Yeah, I think everything, by the way, I think everything beyond my top 3, honestly, probably everything beyond my top 2, I need way more plays of.
I don't know. There's games like Apiary where I'm like, I know exactly how good Apiary is.
Yeah.
I played it once, but I know, but it's good. I know exactly how good it is. Horses Carriage, I'm like, I may be way off on how, it might be really good.
Right.
And I just might think it's cool.
Yeah, there's some games you get the feeling that there's more.
Fantastic for 0.001% of the gaming population.
Right. Absolutely.
You know.
Which is the splatter method.
Yeah.
Which could be me.
All right. We are to number 10, our last game.
Top 10.
Top 10, the last game that is only appearing on a single list. Elders number 2, Rats of Whistar.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Rats of Whistar. Okay. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
So,
having only played it once, I couldn't put it on my top 10 list.
And we actually, in America, do not actually have access to this game until February when Capstone starts shipping it. So the only way that you could have had this game in 2023 is through European means or Asian means.
That's like how Marrakesh came out in 2022, but it was only in America in 2023.
I cannot wait to play it. I have pre-ordered it through Capstone. I'm very excited for it. It is Simone Luciani, my favorite designer of all time, and Daniel Sabia, who I don't know, but I'm super excited for it.
Playing a Simone Luciani game where there are tiles on the board all over the place that are flipped over, and there is an exploration and discovery. It's almost a 4X in some weird ways. It was really interesting to play a game that had those mechanics from that pedigree and that style of designer, and to see what he does with them. Yeah. I thought that so
huge card pool too, right? Like, it's a card
very game. Yes, huge card pool,
which I've never seen in Simone Luciani game.
Super clever design too, because what you are you are a group of super intelligent rats who have escaped a laboratory.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the cards, the majority of the cards, are from a invention deck. And it's all things like it's a matter transporter and it's a cheese grater with a rubber band around it that's attached to a fork, and it's a catapult that's throwing people.
It's also very rare that Simone does like a sort of a lighter, funner theme like that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't feel like it was a very heavy game, but it was not a light game by any stretch of the imagination. There is a
BGG
rondel.
BGG has it at 3.3.
I thought it was heavier than that. There is a rondel in which you can place your head rats or whatever into that. But there are also the worker rats, kind of ranking. There are also other rats, and where they are in relation to the rondel tells you how powerful that part of the rondel is. There are essentially three sections outside of the rondel, and by manipulating how many rats are in the various places, it impacts the power of that set of actions, which is not
sounds
just
like
one
a,
slice.
Sounds like a really cool game. Can't wait to play it. What's the next one?
Well, this is a game that could go higher on our list later on.
No, that's what I'm saying. I was just saying, like I'm excited for it.
But you haven't played it. I haven't played it.
No, yeah. None of us have. Oh, no, Tom's played it.
Tom played it.
That just sounded a lot more brusque than I meant to. I just meant to say, it sounded awesome.
Elder and
I'm excited to hear what the next thing is.
Maybe the most aligned taste of anybody in the group. Like, it's almost never that Elder loves a game that I haven't really liked. So I'm into it.
Number 9, appearing on two lists. This is Dimitri's number 2 and Matt's number 5, Stationfall.
Those are the only two people's lists that it was on.
Yeah.
Stationfall is my number 7.
I think Stationfall is just, I don't know. I played it like 5 or 6 times and it went immediately onto my shelf of favorite games of all time, which I have. I have a shelf in my office that is my favorite games of all time. And it was on my shelf. After 5 or 6 games, it went right on my shelf because there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
It's what I want out of a secret trader game that takes, you know, a couple hours to play. That isn't a filler.
Yeah. There's only one problem with the game. It's an amazing game. The only problem with it is that it takes a long time to learn how to play the game. Right. If it wasn't for that, if you could just zap into people's mind how to play the game, it would be played like twice a month, 3 times a month, because it is so much fun. It is so interesting.
Like Horseless Carriage, I think it is one of the games that probably deserves that meta. Like I could see this being a lifestyle game. I could see this being a game that a group plays once a month forever.
Am I wrong to put this in the same category as something like Blood on the Clock Tower?
I was
not a fan of this for the same reason I was not a fan of Blood on the Clock Tower, which is that I wanted a more distilled experience, and this had a lot of wheels that got me in the way of like the hidden traitor game I thought I wanted to play. I don't know. Maybe I had the wrong expectations.
I hear what you're saying because there is an aspect where you're trying to keep who you are secret for a significant period of time, because once you're out, once people know who you are, you could be messed with.
You're easy to be thwarted.
I did enjoy that. I think in the one game I played, I think everyone thought I was the monkey and I was an engineer.
You did
and
really
I was
well.
I was confusing a lot of people, and that was like very, very fun for me. And I really enjoyed my one play of it, but I just need more plays of it. Yeah. I've only played it once.
I think it has a very high skill ceiling and also a very high silliness ceiling. And those often can be opposite experiences. But I think this game actually has a chance to be equally experiential and storytelling. While also, I think if you really put in the 1,000 hours into this game, like I think the best player will win this game 99% of the time.
I don't think that's quite true, just because there is a randomness factor built into the game, built into how many things are going on, and that
I think it's mitigatable.
Maybe. I doubt that. I think that there are just going to be too many unintended consequences.
Isn't it going to be like just getting really good at werewolf? Ultimately,
there's a lot of gamesmanship here and a lot of
The game is all about activating characters that you are not to do things that appear innocuous but are in actuality helping you toward your goal.
It's about an understanding of all the characters in the game, the way they can possibly interact with each other,
and all of the systems and subsystems on the station. Right. I mean, there's so much going on.
And
there.
What can happen? What possible disasters are waiting for you if you open up the hatch?
Project X and all that stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
Which again, that all of that stuff does not feel elegant.
There is nothing elegant about this game.
But which is why it takes you 2 hours to teach a 2-hour game. but it is amazing when you get it together.
No, Ion Games have never made an elegant game. That is not what you do not go to.
And
Ion
by the way,
Games
it doesn't take. It doesn't take. To be fair, in defense of the game, it only takes 1 hour, not 2 hours.
Point of
which
order.
Is a big difference.
I'm sorry. Did you teach Mike Kennenek this game?
Oh well, oh, you know.
Anyway, Matt Eklund designed it, and
fair.
He also did PAX Transhumanity, which I think is a masterpiece, and has also been very much involved in all the PAX games. So he's I'm into Matt Eklund's designs.
Fun. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Our next game, number 8, a game I really want to play. It appears on 2 lists. It is Matt's number 3 and Jordan's number 3. This is Earthborn Rangers.
People love this game.
I want to be an Earthborn Ranger.
So I put my list together this year thinking less about what I thought were objectively the best games and more about what were the most important games in my life this year.
Uh-huh.
And Earthborn Rangers absolutely took over my life for months. I listened to every episode of their podcast. I became obsessed with it. And it got me back obsessed with solo story-based LCGs as well. And it got me back into Lord of the Rings. And it got me back into Arkham. And Earthborn Rangers could very well be the best of all of them. And as a writer, as a storyteller, I'm always wanting to try every story-based heavy Euro-ish game because I'm just always waiting for somebody to just make the perfect version of the game that I don't know what it is because that's not how my brain works.
Can you pitch this game in like 30 seconds for people so they understand?
Yeah, Earthborn Rangers is a card-based game that is narrative. You're going on a campaign that will last 20 to 30 sessions, and you are a character in a post-apocalyptic happy world. I think some people call this sunpunk or something. There's like names for it. That's like
it's optimistic.
This is the world ended, but we rebuilt it, and it actually is. Everything is good, and we actually solved climate change, and we did all these good things.
Is it ecopunk?
No. That's not the word they've used for it, but it's.
But like, there's no combat.
There is no fighting in the game. There's no killing.
Oh,
there's
solar punk.
Solar punk. Thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking. There's no killing in the game. It's all about connecting with animals and with other people. It's all about overcoming obstacles. Are you mechanically doing the same things you would do if you're murdering someone when you're communicating with them? Yes, but just the fact that the theme is not that, I think, is really interesting. And it's a sandbox. So you have this giant trail map that looks exactly like a trail map you'd go to if you went to Yosemite or something with all the possible trails. And the game begins and just goes, go. And stories start happening. And you get quests that pull you in different places. And every time you play the campaign, which has a destination ending that will take about 20 to 30 sessions, and the session's about 90 minutes, so 20, 30 hours, maybe 40 hours for a campaign. And it is open world in the same way that Breath of the Wild is open world. It's like, yes, there's a story, but like, feel free to ignore it for a long time and do other things. And in fact, ignore it forever. And like, just make your own story. I play it two-handed solo, meaning it's the same as if I was playing with somebody else, but why would I want to play with another person? That would be absurd.
What a waste of time.
Playing with another person?
Multi-hand solid.
Ew.
I think Earthborn Rangers, in another timeline where I don't have access to this wonderful game group, is hands down my game of the year. Nope. But it's also, if you're listening to this podcast, tomorrow, if you're listening to the day this comes out, on the 23rd, the reprint and expansion go up on GameFound.
Wow.
So, Earthborn Rangers is about to, they said they were going to expand a campaign's amount of new material every year. And so that much like an LCG, this will be a game with a huge card pool. You'll be building huge decks. The campaigns could go hundreds of hours. It's very exciting.
2-player max?
No, 4-player max.
I've heard nothing but great things about this game. I was, I was not initially drawn to it because I really am like once bin, twice shy by games like
CCGs in general.
Seventh Continent or Eighth Continent, whatever it was.
Seventh Continent.
Where I just was like, hated it, batch. No, honestly, I did because it was like, I felt like it was this game was trying to emulate what I could just be doing with a video game. Like,
yeah,
100%. Let me just play a video game. So when I hear, it's an open world game, I'm thinking I can just play Tears of the Kingdom, which I've been playing for 7 months. So, but this pitch is moved the needle for me a little bit, I have to say.
It's really cool. Wow. And also the most beautiful art I've ever seen in a game ever. History.
Yeah, it's great. You showed me the art. It's gorgeous.
History of it. It's like a Studio Ghibli movie come to life.
Mm,
wow. Absolutely incredible.
Wow.
So I think what we're seeing here is like, we just
and,
played
and Jordan's
this game.
The one who told me about it, who got me into it. Yeah.
So this one could really go up because I think, you know, you and Jordan are the only ones who've played it. It's both on your top 5 list. So as more of us play it, The next one here we have is kind
of... It was about an 8 out of the 20 top threes on our Discord as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just, with our group, how are you going to do the 40, 50 hour?
You wouldn't. We wouldn't. That's why it's...
That's the problem. Yeah.
Our next game is in contrast to that, where I think that kind of everybody has played this one, and it probably makes everybody's top 10, but it only made two people's top 5 this time. This is my number 2, and also Tom's number 3. This is White Castle.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. How was this? What number did it end up in?
This is number 7. It only appeared on your list and my
crazy
list.
Crazy.
Almost on mine. It was, earlier when I said about the games, I was rotating in and out. I wasn't sure. Like, yeah. White Castle. Trey was very kind enough to come over to my place last week because I was like, I want to play White Castle before we do this episode. He came over. My friend Matt came over.
Trey, I thought we had a deal where we would not let him play White Castle.
Trey was very kind. He broke his deal with you.
He's no Mike Cannon.
And it was so fun. But I was like, I still was like, I'm not sure. Is this, I couldn't tell. Is this my number 4 game? Is this my number 6 game?
You have
game?
One play, you know.
It wound up as my number 6, ultimately. It was just, but like, that's how much I liked it, that it was really between it. Like, it actually almost even made it to number 3.
With more plays, it very, very well might.
It probably will. I mean, I'd like to revisit this entire list in about 5 months.
We talk about how Station Fall is completely
inelegant.
Inelegant. This is an elegant game. There is no question about it. This is a deeply, deeply elegant midweight game.
It's funny. I've played this 3 times now. I've thoroughly enjoyed all my plays, and I've never thought about it in between. And if it just appeared from my collection tomorrow, I wouldn't notice. Somehow, it's almost too elegant to me. Like, I'm actually like very much excited for the inevitable expansion for this, because to me, it's missing something to hook me. Like, it almost just feels like it's so clean. But it also just feels very simple and very like, I don't know. Like, there isn't something really pulling me. I like Red Cathedral more. Of the 2 games from these designers, I think Red Cathedral, I get like, oh, that's exciting to me.
Red Cathedral to me is like
White Castle.
Maybe a top,
I just feel like,
game,
I don't know. It just feels.
I may like it more than Red Cathedral. I'm not sure.
I do.
But it's certainly in the conversation with Red Cathedral for me.
So the reason why I landed at number 6 was there was a little bit of that like forgettability factor for me. But it's like, I don't even want to say that.
You only played
because
it once.
Yeah, I played it once, but also like I enjoyed it so much. The moment you even say there was like a shred of that factor, people are just going to hear the game's forgettable. It's not.
No,
we had
it's
so
not.
Much fun.
It's
we were
not.
Laughing.
I'm
we actually we
I enjoyed a, it while I'm playing it a lot every time. I'm just saying when it's over, it's like
it was one of those things
like
where
fast
like
food.
You just know there's some games that when you play it, it sticks. It just stays in your head in a certain way, and it didn't stay in my head in the same way. But it's not a negative. It just means maybe why it didn't get to number 4 for me right now. But I think it could. We had a tremendous amount of fun. There was a lot of joke. There was like a lot of laughter about people taking the die that you want, to people doing this, people doing that.
Very interactive. Which is a breath of fresh air.
I'm really happy to have it in my collection.
I would say a small box, a 20-minute teach, hour and a half play time.
Yeah.
That is going to check a lot of boxes for a lot of people.
It's welcome.
How many times are you, I'm asking the listener, are you getting together for a game night and then suddenly you hear that one person is going to be an hour late? Well, what do we play that takes an hour or an hour and a half?
That's so meaty.
There aren't that many games that are this fulfilling and this meaty that play in that time.
It was a lot of game for that box.
A lot of game. I'm very excited about these designers. I'm interested to see what they do in the future. I mean, I think both Red Cathedral and White Castle, I mean, are
fantastic.
And so I'm excited to see where they go. They do occupy like their own space too. I feel like these are very elegant games that are doing simple but deep is one of the hardest things in the world, in my opinion, and they're just nailing it. So
yeah, I could see Red Cathedral moving up. I meant White Castle moving up. And by the way, they did an excellent job with the Red Cathedral expansion, which I think did come out last year.
Yeah.
So
we'll get one late this year, I imagine.
I feel like they'll probably do a nice job with White Castle.
Me too.
All right, number 6, also 7 points, but appearing on 3 lists. This is my number 5, Elders number 3, and Ben, your number 3. This is Cutnahora.
Yeah. Really enjoyed this game. I've actually only played it twice, but like, this is an example of, I played this one only twice and immediately I was like, there's, this to me was a very elegant game, and there's a lot of stuff going on in it, and it all worked together like clockwork. Very smooth gameplay, really clever. I really loved Cutting Horror. I think it fired off on all cylinders.
Certainly the card machine that tracked the economy of the game is a fairly brilliant innovation and is probably something we may likely and probably should see a lot more of.
Yeah, people should rip off that part.
Boy, oh boy, yeah. is that gorgeous and fantastic and dynamic and interesting. And it
models an economy.
Yes, it does.
So well, yeah. Where the actions you take in the city or in the mines are affecting supply and demand of like five different resources that we're tracking through this kind of sliding card system.
But I like that people control guilds, mm-hmm. and then those guilds, how you decide to put them on your player board is going to impact the bonuses that you can get. The bonuses are incredibly important. Like, I just feel like there are a lot of systems, and it just takes one of them to be kind of wonky and for the whole thing to fall apart. But they all are integrated together very, very well. Like, I know we had some small quibbles about certain things, but they are like, who cares? Because I think overall the game just does a huge amount very, very well.
I absolutely adore this game. And the only reason it's not on my list is because I played it one time. But the one time I played it blew my socks off. Far exceeded my expectations. This could easily be my number one, number two, number three game of the year after more plays. I like it. It has a higher potential ceiling than my number four game, which we'll talk about eventually. But I don't know. I'm enamored with this game. I also think it's the most beautiful Euro that was released this year. I think it's,
yeah, on top of everything else, it looks beautiful.
It's gorgeous. I love it. It doesn't look like anything else.
Really?
I just love the way
it was also like surprisingly interactive, mm-hmm. you know, not just in terms of like where you're placing stuff. It forces asymmetry in that the guild system means you cannot buy.
Not very interactive in a two-player game, we should mention. Because the two-player, there's no overlap.
True. I don't think I would recommend it at two.
No.
I think if I'd only recommend it at four.
I think it's perfect for, yeah.
It felt right, but I found like there was a lot of wonderful moments in that where you're looking at the system. Mm-hmm. And saying, if I wait just a moment here, wood's about to become cheaper. Or if I build this building, yes, it's going to help me, but it's going to depress the price of meat. And that's going to make things better for Ben. You know, like it had the way that it interconnected in terms of the economy with some fairly simple mechanisms was really fascinating. So like the timing of how you sequenced your actions wasn't just this solo thing of now I have to do this, now I have to do this, now I have to do this. A lot of times you're waiting until someone else makes a move to set up your move.
I've only played it three times and I feel I do not understand the game at all. That's how good it is.
It feels like that.
And this is an absolute compliment to me. It feels like an UVA game to me. Like this almost feels like
it could be.
Like a mid 2010s UVA game.
Well, this is a check UVA games. Game. This is their big game for the year. Yeah. Although it's not.
Well,
they are also a company I do not think of when I think of elegant games. But I do think.
Don't they also have another game about traveling to another planet?
I don't know.
Is that another thing? Okay. Anyway,
Mission to Mars or something
Galaxy,
like that.
No. Galaxy Trucker, the new version.
No.
A game that is coming up on the list.
Oh, that's them too?
Is that?
No, it's not.
Is it not?
It's not.
Spoilers. All right. Number five.
They're delicious games.
Number five.
It feels like it should be, though.
A polarizing game. This game only appeared on two lists. But it was Matt and Jordan's number two.
Oh,
look at you guys.
I know, Voidfall.
That knitting club you two have is really going well.
You were just saying how much you aligned with Elder, but it's actually you and Jordan a lot of time.
Well, but then every once in a while, like we're way off on things. But Elder and I are almost always somewhere aligned. Yeah. Voidfall, much like Earthborn Rangers, just took over my brain for 3 months out of this 12 months this year. It was a huge thing for me. Mainly because it took 3 months to learn how to play it and
and
6 weeks to set it up. I really adore this game. I do think, unfortunately, it's best at two or three players, and which means it will very rarely get to my table, but I like it enough to force it to my table. I think it's also a game that requires a lot of investment in its players. I think you want to play with the same two or three people every time. I think you really got to start knowing. You got to be able to like set up a scenario. I think the scenarios are all really interesting and really well designed and feel different. And I think you have to have a knowledge of the game to look at the map, to look at the available technologies and understand what this map is now asking the players to do.
Let's remind people kind of like the bit, because this is supposed to be kind of like the ultimate
4X,
4X, but that played in 3 hours. But
yeah, this is a 3X that does actually take 2 to 3 hours to play, but it, I do not exaggerate when I say it takes 30 to 45 minutes to set up.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is, it's a game where if you're going to play it, you have to set it up before the people come over. Mm-hmm. You have to have it ready to go and setting on the table because it is an absurdly long setup because there's a lot of steps to it. The game is not wildly complicated. I don't think it's a very long teach. I think you could teach a game in 30 minutes or so. I think it's...
Kind of. I mean, you do have to go through all of the card actions and go through the phases, what they are, what they do. It's real, but that's more having to do with understanding the hieroglyphics of the symbolisms.
It is a game, though, that once you really like have played it, you know, I think I've played it probably 10, 12 times now. Like, you know, by your 7th or 8th game, like... It doesn't feel overwhelming. It just feels like, and it's one of those games where you're just like, the choices are agonizingly gorgeous. Yeah. And like, oh my God. And like, and if you go into it thinking that it's Eclipse, that it's a game where I'm rolling dice and blowing up ships, like it's not. It really is a game where there will be, people describe it as a Cold War game, right? This is a game about the threat of violence is much a bigger deal than the actual violence. It's about like, well, I see you arming up. If we go to war, we both lose, but I must arm up as well.
Right.
Or else.
Yeah. But doesn't it reward you for attacking, though? Like, there's a lot of points to be made from attacking.
Not really. Not often.
My big complaint about the game, or the thing, or not even a complaint, it's for me, I'm discovering that I am not exactly a Mind Clash guy a little bit. And part of it is, with this game, one of the things is that you can go a long time in the game before you have any meaningful interaction with
a
neighbor.
That is the design.
There is a 30% of the game that's set up.
Yes.
That is, I'm going to now plan my strategy. You will plan your strategy. I watch you plan my strategy, which affects my strategy. And then we move to this act two.
I think
they did themselves, honestly, I think they did themselves a disservice by trying to really push it as a 4X, like a different, like a Euro 4X, whatever it was. I think it, for me, it like definitely baked in some expectations of what I thought the experience was going to be like. But the good news is the decisions were really good. There's a lot of interesting, cool stuff in there. Not in my top 10.
Yeah, the cards that, you know, you play the card and you're choosing two of the three options on the card. It's really
absurd because like as a new player, you have a hand of seven cards with three actions each. You have 21 actions to choose from, and each one is a lot of steps to each action.
And you're going to play five of them before you pull them back.
No, that is now. I thought like, the first time I played Voidfall, I was like, oh, this is great. With all these choices, and you can only choose two, like the sequencing, which, by the way, was something of what I also liked about Cutting a Horror. To me, Cutting a Horror kind of gave me
that feeling. It's a little more streamlined.
Like a smaller version of it.
More manageable.
Yeah. But I think for me, I had a hard time getting over the hump of the 4X hump there a little bit. I actually wanted the game to be longer, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. I felt like the game ended just as I was ramping up. But
you wanted to be Forbidden Stars, or
I probably did. Yeah. It's not fair. And but that being said, fully
nicely, it doesn't replace any of the 4X games that we love, like Forbidden Stars or
it doesn't.
Twilight Imperium.
But that being said, I really enjoyed it the first time I played it, and I only played it twice. And I'm happy, like you and Jordan have been really exploring it.
I think your point about investment, it definitely rings true for me, because I think this, like, I've that way with some 18XX games where, like, I know it's going to require a lot of investment and I'm not willing to do it. I bounced pretty hard off of Voidfall and just kind of know, like, oh, I'm probably never going to play it just because I'm not going to do the, like, there's just too many other good games. And also, like, it's just not my kind of game anymore where we're going to, like, build up and then attack each other at the end, and we're going to, you know, kind of threaten and cajole each other over who attacks. And the real winner is the person who doesn't attack. It's like, those, I played those games all throughout my teenage years. I'm not sure I want to play
any. I'm very, very
glad remembers.
I'm very glad it's where it is on our list because it deserves that spot. It is one of the more talked about, one of the more thought about games this year in terms of spectacle. I mean, it's a big, beautiful box with tons and tons of stuff. Yeah. And its design is pushing the game industry farther forward. It's got a lot of elements that I haven't seen in another game. There's a lot of things going on in there that are pretty unique.
Our number four, the first game to appear on four different lists.
Whoa.
Solid game, Nucleum.
Nucleum.
This is also our first number one. This is Elder's number one game, Tom's number five, Matt's number four, and Ben's number four.
I have to say, it's sort of number four on my list. It felt weird to put a number four. I only played it once and I played a two-player game. And I feel like I have not even really played the game. Mm-hmm. I feel like I got a taste of it. I was like, really, this is where I was having a hard time because I just played White Castle. So it was fresh. Mm-hmm. Nucleum was like 2 months ago. It was this two-player game. But I was like, you know what? There's stuff in Nucleum that I just really, really enjoyed. And I felt weird putting it at number four. Doesn't, you know what, who cares? I'm not giving the backstory about why it's at number four. Sure. The point is, it's a fun game, and there's a lot of really cool stuff in it.
I weighted my games by how much space they took up in my real estate of my brain throughout the year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if I was just weighting them by what I think is the best game, this is probably my number two. I think this is a potential classic. It's too early to say that. To me, this doesn't feel that outside of how I felt the first time I played Terraforming Mars or Terra Mystica or Barrage or all these games that are now just unequivocal classics. I had the same feeling when the first few plays of this. It's just like I went home. I couldn't sleep. I was thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about possible strategies, things I could have done. It just owned me. And it's a game. We're already getting the new map in 6 weeks.
Aussie.
The Australia map is coming out. Like that's, I love that. This is a system.
Yeah.
This game should be treated as a system.
Yeah.
Which is, So for me, this is, I was shocked when this ended up in my number five slot.
Yeah.
And shocked in a very interesting way because it made me look back at 2023, which I don't think in my head was a particularly great year for games. Like my perception of the year wasn't that it was a particularly exceptional year. Now looking at
it's
very
it, good.
If deep. Nucleum is my number five,
that's nuts.
Holy
cow. This would have been number one last year and probably the year before.
I'm bummed. I feel like I missed the Nucleum window because that's when I had my appendicitis. And so everyone was playing it. And then by the time I was like, what about Nucleum?
People
didn't want to play. And then we were going to try to play a game, but I think we got derailed by something or another. Yeah. So I feel like I have not had my proper Nucleum experience yet.
We're going to make sure you do because we'll be playing.
Even with just a taste of it with a two-player, I was like, this is really
For people that aren't familiar with it, this is another Simone Luciani, David Turksy game and has been kind of described as in between Barrage and Brass in terms of what it's doing.
And 70% Brass, 30% Barrage.
It does have a lot of both, actually.
Yeah.
It has, for me, the mechanism of the year, the new mechanic that I have never seen before that I think is truly groundbreaking, which is the tiles that you use to choose your actions are also the track you lay on the board.
Yeah, and I think that's why I got to number four.
And that you lose forever.
There was an innovation there that I felt like White Castle and Great Western Trail did not have.
Yeah, I think that the implications of that mechanism as you play it in the game is nothing short of kind of revolutionary. And if people start to do more things like that, like take what normally is just a pile of inert resources that you're putting on the board and turning that into a tough decision, that's incredible.
But also, I think you're missing one trick there, which is that the way that the more that you play to your board decides the ceiling of your production.
Yeah, that's another side
incredible.
Of it.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to play, you have to do a lot of actions in order to get the income that you need every round. But also, you have to cannibalize your actions in order to build the rails you need. Like it's
and there is
horrible choices.
There are ways to play that game where I am not building up my economy as much as other players, but it's allowing me to have a faster refresh tempo, which is fascinating.
And also actually asymmetric factions that play totally differently.
Yes.
I think that the tech tree on each one is absolutely a different play style.
Yeah.
Almost not quite as much as I'd say like Terra Mystica's factions are completely different play styles, but like Halfway there.
If this is my number five, it's probably because of the tech tree, which did not capture my imagination the way I was hoping it would.
Tech tree. There's only three branches on this tree.
And let's not overlook the elephant in the room, is that we've been begging for years for a game that was provided an alternate timeline of events that happened in Saxony pertaining to an energy revolution.
Yeah, thank God.
You. So yeah.
Somebody finally did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many letters did we write?
Yeah.
It was really it's
I've
fun.
Been waiting for a Chernobyl fantasy for a long time, you know.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah.
I have to
I say, mean this we is- and we're by the way, we're two for two now. We said, why don't we have mechs at the beginning of dam building in Eastern Europe?
Yeah.
And why
I think Mirage and this take place in the same universe.
By the way, this is sort of an aside. I saw today that Devere Games has a game coming out that also looks like it's in one of these like alternate universes, a parallel universe pertaining to energy about the Salton Sea here in California. It's called the Salton Sea. And it's about mining. It looks like it's about mining the Salton Sea for lithium. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I... it's just not what I think of when I think of the Salton Sea.
No, there's a lot of lithium there.
I also just want to say the Board and Dice, who made this game, have made like most of my favorite games the past like 5 years. Like, I mean,
Teotihuacan,
Toledum, Tekenyu, Nucleum, Trey's favorite, Trismegistus.
Oh, so good.
I mean, like, they do all the T games, and they've also done, you know, this. Like, they're killing it. Like,
I can't wait to play more.
They have become a I just order whatever they put out publisher at this point.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Right. We're going to make a big leap here because the gap,
whoa,
if Nucleum was 10 points on four lists, our number three is 17 points.
Wait,
our
number almost double.
Is there number three on the wait? Where are we on the master
number three.
List?
The master list, we are now going to our number three. So Nucleum was number four with 10 points.
Number five was Voidfall?
Yeah.
From two people. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but beloved by two.
Yes.
Okay. Number three, 17 points on four lists. This is Age of Innovation.
Yeah.
So this is Paul's clear number one, Matt's number one, Jordan's number one, Tom's number four.
Wow.
Yeah, this is the best game of the year. I'll be playing this game in 20 years.
I can't really argue with it. The reason it's my number four is that it's an improving of something that already exists.
Yeah, but it's the best game of the year. If I had to parse my entire collection down to 10 games, this I don't even have to think about that this one's in there.
I'm not sure I can play this game again.
Oh, I'll be playing this game forever.
Wow, really?
No, because the last time I played it, I beat Lumen. And
I got to lock in it.
I'm done. I'm absolutely done.
Is this his specialty, this game? Age of Innovation? Or...
No, it is everything that I asked for when I said, why do they keep making Terra Mystica expansions and they are not doing anything with Gaia Project?
Yeah.
They are now,
but I remember hearing about this is like, I'd really rather they just do a Gaia expansion. Yeah. Like, why are they going back to this?
This is their way of answering that because it has a lot of Gaia in it. The choices that they have made in picking and choosing between all the different mechanisms of those two different game systems, including some new things that we haven't seen yet, nothing short of perfect. Perfect
this is
choices.
Probably my third favorite game of all time.
Wow.
Agricola and Barrage.
I mean, what else would it be?
Yeah.
It's probably Agricola and Barrage in this, or like my three favorite games of all time.
There's a lot of things that you could put on the list, but I understand.
I play board games because I love heavy Euros. And sure. this is as good as it gets for me. That isn't Agricola.
I mean, you didn't name Vittel game, so
yeah, which is weird. Yeah, not there isn't like we've had this conversation before.
Yeah, we have. Yeah,
yeah. He makes a lot of really great games, but none that is like maybe your favorite.
There's no Splatter up in there either. So
in my top 10, absolutely there would be.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't love this game, and maybe it's because I didn't love Terra Mystica. I mean, I think I still like Terra Mystica a little bit better. Like this just, to me, in my brief, like three plays of it, it just felt like more. I liked the drafting. There's some minor changes to the cult tracks, which they don't call cult tracks anymore. The big thing really is what? Now you can get the innovations, and that's the extra kind of layer, right? You've got books as a resource.
Build-A-Bear factions.
Yeah, I do like the Build-A-Bear
faction. The splitting of the factions up into different parts is a huge thing.
But is that a good thing? Like Paul says, a lot of times you could just stop at the end of the draft and kind of decide who won.
I don't think that's true.
If it is true, it means that there's a shitty player at the table who allowed that to happen.
Huge overstatement, yeah. Listen, the books in the game is essentially the QIC cubes from that, which is one superpowered resource that unlocks things nothing else unlocks. That is a good addition.
Which are the actual like innovations. What is
correct.
That? There's like 18 one or something that you can grab. They're both additional buildings that can go on there, but they're also special powers. So it was just, to me, it felt a little bit like, oh, here's another layer. Did I want another layer? Clearly for a lot of people, this is a refinement and this extra layer that really elevates it.
It's my number four on a year where I'm shocked that this is number four. So yes, this is a great game. There's no question.
If I have a list that I did before we did this list, and that list includes games that don't qualify for this list. So that's like my true top 10 of the year.
Right.
And on that true top 10, it's my number eight. I played it twice. The first time I played it, I was not expecting to really, I thought I'd have a fine time, but I had a great time. Mm-hmm. Second time I played it, I also had a really fun time. It just doesn't capture my imagination the way it does for you guys. I think cause I don't have a baseline love of Terra Mystica. Mm-hmm. So I think that actually contributes a lot to how much you'll love this game. But I do, I mean, I own Gaia Project. I really enjoy Gaia Project. I just find this entire system of games to be very difficult. And so every time I think about embarking on one of the games, I feel a sense of dread and anxiety. And so I just am not drawn to wanting to play them. But then once I get the ball rolling, in this case, of Age of Innovation, I have a really good time. But for me, it's more of like an eighth place for me.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting. I think what I've really learned about myself is that my very favorite games are games that I know will take 10 years to become
to master. Yeah.
And I love that journey. Mm-hmm. And so Agricola for me is that this, like when it's just like, oh, I love a game where I know I'll be getting better at this for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so I don't care about each play. I know I'm going to suck and I know I'm going to fail, but I'm looking, it's that very slow incremental improvement that I actually adore in games. And it's like, it feels like a form of self-improvement almost. It's like, and also I feel like this game and Agricola are games that the better you get at them, the better you get at all games. I think there is a level of just basic gamesmanship to them, of board parsing, of understanding economy, of understanding tempo, things like that. And I think these games boil those high level concepts down to their basics, where it's like I get better at all games the better I get at both this and Agricola. Mm-hmm.
I can't disagree with any of that. Yeah, it's an amazing game.
Also, I have to say, there is the potential for this to be a really cutthroat game. I'm not going to say a mean game, but I definitely had an experience in my first game where I was like I was blocked pretty hard and I came back from it. But like, you know, I think that like my first game, like I had a lot of fun, but it also established a tone of like,
who hurt you?
I did get like a little bit of a sting there.
Tell me who hurt you.
It's irrelevant. That can like affect your view of a game, you know.
These games do not work well. This and Agricola are two games that do not work well with an uneven level of experience at the
table.
They just don't. They don't work. In fact, the game becomes degenerate potentially because of that.
A bad player makes it bad for themselves
and everyone else at the table.
No, but they don't know who they're advantaging. That's what it really is.
They don't understand the economy. They don't understand the game they're playing. Right.
Yeah. And every subpar move is a boon to one person more than the other.
And I felt that way when I was playing the game. I felt like I was playing with people who had more experience, and I just felt I was like in the lion's den, and like that. Why I felt like a sense of anxiety, as opposed to like, oh, look at this like really fun game I can just explore. I felt like I was playing a game. I had like my little butter knives out, and I was like looking left and right, and like trying with a flashlight, just trying to get through the dark.
We'll put you at a table. We'll play this again without Paul, and I think you'll have a better time.
Paul was not a problem for me.
Sure.
Matt, just kind of finishing on your point here, like when I look at my top five list, I think what this game does for you is, and clearly does for Paul, is like this has the potential to become the game for certain players. Mm-hmm. Like this is your game. This is the game you play. Like for you and me, like Agricola still occupies that space of like the one that I continue to play and continue to think about. And even we're dwarfed entirely by the actual great players of that game who we watch on Twitch, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. But like Age of Innovation is one of those. And I don't think there's another one on my list that like I have think is going to be like the game that I want to play all the time. I think I shifted a little bit more towards, ironically, innovation in terms of the mechanisms and like, oh, I haven't seen this before. Or like in White Castle's case, I feel like I'm rewarding just the sheer elegance and compactness of that game. It's doing something like
variability.
Yeah, like I don't know any other game that's that tight. But is it going to become the one game I play? No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay, number two, appearing on five lists.
Dang.
My favorite Vladimir Succi game and the number one game for me.
Succi.
Thank you. Also, Paul's number four, Dimitri's number three, Tom's number two, Ben's number two. This is Evacuation.
Yeah.
I also absolutely adore this game. This, like, Cut and Ahura was the other one. I'm like, this could be my number one. I played it once, and I absolutely adored it. I played it once, and I'm like, yeah, I might like this more than Underwater Cities. I don't know yet, but I might.
It's hard,
hard
to tell.
But I might.
The puzzle of dismantling an economy in order to rebuild an economy in a different place, and the challenge of the timing and the and you can't do everything that you need to do in order to do that, and what is going to hurt the most. It's incredible.
And it feels like it would be the same every game, and yeah, it's very different. It's like just the little areas where there's variability in the game are just incredibly impactful. What spaceships come out, what stadiums come out, what cards, you know, it's like I said when we were reviewing it, the thing that really makes this game stand out for me versus really many, almost every other game this year or many years is that it's not about like, how do you engage with the clever concept of the game? Like, you know, how do you engage with a certain type of rondelle, or how do you engage with a certain way you playing your cards or burning through your cards? It's saying, how do you approach the way you play this game? Like, how do you deal with this concept? It's how do you decide that you're going to go into this game? It's like playing a game of football. I'll say that because it was playoffs this weekend. It's like, you're about to go into this game. You have a game plan. You have an idea of how you want to approach it. And it's almost like it's a deeper like level of consideration that I'm just like blown away by.
Yeah.
I think I'm comfortable saying this is to me the number one new heavy board game of the year. I think this is the best heavy board game I've played this year that was not a grand iteration of something else. That was just like,
it feels wholly new.
Oh snap. Yeah. This is new, like new theme, new mechanics. I had no idea how the strategy or the tempo or anything could be going on here. So much to explore.
Completely lost at sea on my first play.
Oh my God. Completely lost.
But also loving it. And and grokking it enough to stay afloat, but knowing like, oh, the ceiling's high on this one.
I think it's really fun to fail at this game.
Yeah.
Because when you fail, you fail. Like there's no gray area. You're either like you're in the zone and you're in the tempo because it's a game about tempo. You're in that vibe and you feel great because you're just like you're going along. Or you messed up way early on, and now you're just
trying
struggling
to surf
for
that
2 hours.
And you
like watching everything fall apart is actually quite hilarious.
Where was this on yours, Tom?
Two.
Great. Yeah.
And it's got a great modular system. Yeah. Like modular systems, I think I'm starting to sour on them. I think a lot of times it's just designers
just
that
tell
haven't
us what
decided.
The damn
just
game
tell me
is.
What to play.
Please right. tell
me
what to
that's
play.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a game that has a modular system that is much closer to El Grande and the expansions to El Grande, which is that the base game is dead on perfect. Plays just perfectly, and then
you talking about race mode.
Pardon me,
you talking about the race mode? That's the base game, or
no? I'm not talking about the no.
So
I'm
race
talking
mode is the base game. It's like the beginner game, I guess.
I would. So
don't
let me
play race
let me,
mode, people.
Don't play race mode. Just play point mode. Just play point mode as the first game. But add nothing else in.
What about the advanced actions? Where are we standing on that?
This is what I'm saying.
I like
the
them.
Advanced actions
like
are
like
great.
Yeah,
but the game is great without them too.
Yeah,
right, which is that's why I'm using El Grande, because El Grande, the base El Grande is amazing. El Grande with the you choose your own deck of cards is equally amazing in a different way once you know what you're doing.
That's probably a fair thing. Okay, so what if you were to have an evacuation tournament? What are you doing?
I'm doing.
What are the rules?
I'm adding scoring mode, advanced cards, scaring mode.
Oh, I would not do advanced cards for tournament just because it's more variable, right? I would.
Oh, maybe it's a higher skill level though. I don't know.
So if I'm doing my own tournament, not trying to make the best tournament. If I'm doing best tournament, I'm not doing the advanced cards because the advanced cards add too much randomness into the.
Do they though? That's what I'm asking. Do you think they add randomness or is it just a higher skill level and a lot to parse?
It is 100% a higher skill level. There's no question about it.
Okay, that's not random.
But in a tournament, I would probably want to have everybody choosing from the same actions.
So Trey, I remember when I played with you without the advanced ones and you were like, oh, I got enough going on. I'm not interested in advanced, but now you like it. I'm curious to know why.
Well, okay, so here's my take.
You weren't even interested in playing it after we were talking because you were like, I explained the advance. You're like, no, I don't need that.
Well, I think I was still recovering from that first play because this is a heavy game and this is 4.0. A really challenging 4.0. Puzzle. And so I think I'm going to disagree with Tom a little bit in saying, like, just play scoring mode. I don't know. I think I needed the race game.
Maybe the race game
the first
is great.
Because that's what it exists for. It exists to teach.
So wrong that it's great.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Like, the hump to get over was so substantial that if race mode made it 30% more digestible.
I've never played race mode, so I don't know. I've only played point mode.
Then maybe it was necessary. And at the end of it, I felt like I'd played so poorly, the idea of adding on additional complexity was just, I was tossed to it. Now, having played it, it loosened it up. It felt more fun. Also, I was just getting better at it.
Maybe too.
But it was harder. The worst game, you played with the advanced cards the day you got the COVID call. So we actually didn't finish that game. That's right. But I was in like a nosedive, swan dive, whatever the free falls of the plane.
Belly flop.
It was like such a disaster happening to me because those advanced cards were, you just want to keep on playing them and it messed up all of my tempo, but that was great.
You're exploring the space.
Yeah, literally. But it was also like it created presented new challenges. And what I also love about evacuation, which sort of gets in on what seems like you were talking about with Age of Innovation, is that every time I play it, I want to go back and say, I'm ready to play this again because I want to get better. I see areas where I can improve and I just want to keep digging in and explore and do it, make it better and faster and more efficient.
There's still a lot to explore. The advanced cards, Matt,
are essentially this. It's like the base actions, there are four different categories of actions, level 1, 2, 3, and 4. And we know now that we've played this game that you really need to be picking some of those higher numbers because you need to get those satellites going. You need to get those satellites moving.
Right.
But the level 1 actions are more friendly. They're better in certain ways. The cards amplify that. Okay. The cards essentially create zero, where the equivalent of a satellite that isn't going to move at all, but that action is incredible and does a crazy, crazy good things. And some that are cards that will move the satellite 5 or 6 spaces. And it is an action that is so nerfed, you're actually paying extra to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But to have those options,
it's a really interesting
tension. In your strategic pocket is kind of incredible.
I think this is of all the games that came out in 2020, this is the one I'm most excited to play if we were to sit down right now.
We have to have, I think we have our day set up. We're going to do horseless carriage, Nucleum, and evacuation.
Yeah.
I mean, I just couldn't put it on my top 5 because it did take up so little of my brain this year, and I was really focusing on what was my year in games.
Yeah,
understood.
But it is absolutely
by your test, Matt. This is the one that has, popped up as I'm in the shower,
right.
I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking this is really changing the way I think about games because I love me an engine builder. I gravitate towards engine builders. This is an engine destructor and rebuilder.
Well, builder and destroyer.
You have to balance.
Or destroyer and builder.
And by the way, not for nothing, as they say, I've played this game, I think, 5 times, which I did not play many games 5 times, as you remember when we went through my list. And every single time I was excited to play it. And that does not always happen. Sometimes when I play it by 5, I can be like, okay.
Should I announce my? I'm doing a 1x1 challenge this year. Should I announce it?
Oh, I actually created a I created a new challenge. Was it a 5x10? I think I created a 5x10, or maybe it was.
You're out of your mind. But let's move on to the number one, and then we will discuss that nonsense.
Okay, if evacuation was number two, okay, if Age of Innovation was third with 17, evacuation was second with 18.
Ooh.
This is 4 points in the clear with 22, appearing on 5 lists.
No question.
This is my number three, Paul's number two, but Dimitri, Tom, and Ben's number one.
Get out, Tom. Really?
Of course, it's amazing.
Really?
Hegemony.
I am shocked. I did not think this would be your number one.
Okay, so...
Tell people about
that was
the game.
That was a delighted.
If people have not played Hegemony, what is Hegemony, Ben?
I don't know if we've talked about it very much on this show, but in case we have, it's like
maybe
it's
we have some new listeners
class,
for this one.
Class warfare, basically, is we're in a society. One player is going to play. If you have a full player account, someone's going to play working class. Someone's going to play middle class. Someone's going to play capitalist class. Someone's going to play the state, and each quote unquote faction is vying for hegemony. Over the course of 5 rounds, you're just trying to
very asymmetrical.
Do best by
high level of negotiation, high degree of interactivity with each other.
It's a deep ecosystem, and every group has their own goals that they're trying to really achieve, much like in life. And at the end of the game, and like as you play the game, you're getting points for the goals that you make, and you're also passing policy. There's like a political element. There's an economic element because some people are in charge of the job, some people are filling the jobs, and you know everyone has different power. Some people will negotiate for better wages. Some people will be able to negotiate for better prices and costs for things. And there's like, it's an ecosystem. It's a simulation of a. Like modern kind of capitalist society.
Hegemony is our number one game of the year. Congratulations, Ben.
I am shocked.
It's my number one.
Well played, Ben. Do you want to know why it's my number one? I'm happy to say.
All right. Love to know.
So my number five was Nucleum. It has the mechanic of the year. I think that I already explained that. Age of Innovation is my number four because I think it is the perfection of an already great system. Number three, White Castle, the most elegant game of the year. Number two, Evacuation, which is something I've never seen before. But Hegemony is one of those games that doesn't come around too often. It is one of those games that will be referred to for 20, 30, 40 years in the way that we refer to diplomacy, in the way that we refer to civilization.
Everyone should play this game.
It is a clockwork that approaches a civilization from a class lens. And that is something that I have never seen. It is ridiculous that that hasn't happened yet. That hasn't been brought out that way. And the level to which the clockwork operates and functions and literally works, this game should not work. This game should be The Cost. It should be a great idea.
Right. Almost an educational game that doesn't quite pan out, but it does.
It should be a great idea for a game that is, once again, more of a simulation and less of a game. But the freaking thing works. It works as a game, and it works great.
It's a perfect game for our group also because the table talk is amazing. We LARP the hell out of it.
It's almost like you can't not LARP it. Like that, I think that's actually one of its greatest assets is that you're in your faction and you are the things that what you are asking for just for your gameplay of like, I need to staff my workers.
Yeah.
You are automatically just by making that request because you have meeples on the board, by you saying, I need to get jobs for my workers, you are like, without like against your will, you are now all of a sudden LARPing as a working class person, you know, and like that's kind of amazing.
I did not think that the state is the most fun role to play of the four, but doing Bill Clinton the entire game.
What's fun for you?
I feel your pain.
Yeah,
I understand. Big Daddy government's gonna come and help you out.
Okay? There's
Big Daddy government's. Gonna
there's
come
also I think what's really cool about the game is that there's a lot of gray areas in terms of consequences.
Yes,
like if someone says, "Oh, you got to lower taxes because." you know, like your the capitalist player will say, I can, these taxes are too high for me. I'm paying too much in taxes. And it's not like a situation where the working class will say, no, keep taxes high. Like, let's take it to the capitalist player. Because then maybe there is a benefit to the working class saying, actually, yeah, I do want lower taxes. But maybe there's a benefit, but then you lower the taxes and maybe it affects the capitalist player in a different way. There's like all these things are sort of like in flux. Like in real life, there's so many pros and cons to anything you can do, you know?
Yeah, that's the other reason that's my number one, is that it's a game in which the metagame is the game. Right, the metagame is
you do
the game.
Need to grok the systems,
which is no,
but
you have
they're
to understand
very
a lot.
Intuitive.
But at the end of the day, it's the same thing as diplomacy, right?
Yeah,
you have to understand how everything works and how everything works in relation to each other. But the game is about convincing people to do this or to do that, or how what am I going to do in order in that universe, in the metagame yeah. universe.
I'm not surprised at all that you love this. It felt very similar to Demacher for me.
Yeah.
So I've only played this once. So again, didn't make my list, only played it once.
Sure.
Played it with Ben and your friend whose name is
Forrest
and Paul
and
David Gillison. Sorry, Paul did not come and David Gillison took his place and Paul just watched.
Forrest took actually his place.
Right. Sorry. Yes, of course.
Wow.
And I played
next episode we'll talk about.
I played middle class in my first game. And I had a very enjoyable time. Now, my only things I will say about the game that are not negatives at all, but they are, it felt similar to me to Demacher or Diplomacy or things. I think I don't necessarily love an above board game where the above board is like you said, the game. Mm-hmm. And then there's a system underneath that is a game.
Right.
But the above board is maybe more important to understand how to be good at than this. Maybe also connected to why I don't really enjoy Avalon very much. Like I actually maybe. Prefer when the entire game is here.
Right.
And the above board is maybe not that interesting to me.
Yeah.
This has more game to me than most games that have an above board. Sorry, what did you just say?
I said solo games don't have an above board.
No, they don't at all. Yeah. And I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I'm excited to try all four. This also feels like a lifestyle game a little bit. Like
yeah.
I would never want to play this with somebody who was new to, like, I really appreciate you teaching it to me. This doesn't seem like a fun, like it's an all day game. I don't necessarily feel like I want to play an all day game with someone who's never played it before. Like, especially when it's this involved in this, like I want to play this at a competitive level with four people who know it really well. That to me sounds like a great day.
Yeah.
But
yeah, like, this is one of those games where I absolutely want to play every faction at least once.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
I have to say what you say about the game is probably the most common criticism, which is that there are people who say, appreciate what it's trying to do above the board, mm-hmm. but the actual game itself is not like blowing me away. And I get that. I respect it. It's not an issue for me. Yep. For me, I think the above the board stuff is actually so rich that any, you know, criticisms I might have that, like, you know, sometimes you have a hand of cards and the cards are not like totally like lighting me up with excitement. I don't mind because yeah. I just think that the ecosystem around the table is so fascinating that I it's like it blows me away.
I also say my son Aiden, who is a politics major at UC Santa Cruz and who is has a very high level of investment in class consciousness. This is probably his favorite game of all time. He absolutely loves the game and the design of it and just would not stop talking about how much it spoke to him and it was amazing. Yeah. And getting to also see it through his eyes, I was just like, yeah, this is a classic. There's no question about it.
I would like that for the game. I wish the game had sort of a clearer, I wish I had a clearer sense of what we're all fighting for. Like, yes, we're all fighting for this concept of hegemony. Hegemony is like, I guess, being the best class or something. But like, if it was at the end of the game, it's like, oh, now look at our society where we have a strong working class and a weak capitalist. It'd be kind of fun if, like, when you reach the end of the game, it's like, you know, you're vying for like, oh, I really want this to be a good working class society, or I want this to be a good state driven society. It'd be kind of fun if there was like a way.
Okay, so what we can do is we can create an addendum and put it on the geek. And what it'll be is if the state wins and second place is the capitalist and third place is this and fourth place is this, this is what happened to that society.
Paul and I talked about that, and after our game that we played, Matt actually did an extraordinarily great job as the middle class, and then I brutalized him at the very end as the state.
Well, I didn't understand how a rule worked.
Yeah.
And that was my bad.
Why did you do that to us?
And so I, as the state, basically, I pulled some shit. And
I thought I had the game locked up. I thought I had won outright, but I didn't understand how paying back debts worked at the
end. Yeah, and that was my fault as a teacher. But in the end, though, what happened, it was, we had a society where the state was extremely strong, and then middle class was behind it, whatever. And I typed in, what countries does this look like? And we had apparently made Singapore. So,
I know what you mean. You and I both especially love city builders. I think you almost like want a visual representation of the thing at the end. Like, I think I'm thinking almost of like Sid Meier's Civilization, the way that like as your civilization developed, it became defined by the different wonders and the way the map looked at the end, where you could really see, oh, it went this direction in this game or something. The state won because they balanced the other three.
Players like a sense of like sometimes it comes up like this is cool and everything, but what are we really doing here? Like what's like it doesn't make sense that it doesn't make sense that if I for me as the state, I would want everyone to do well, right? Why would I want to take a hit out on the middle class?
If state is number one and middle class is number two, that does sound like Singapore. It's like a little nanny state-ish, but it's a very benevolent one that is really taking care of the middle class.
It would be fun if there was like a way to create some sort of like concrete goals for each class. That way you feel like
I can't.
Yeah.
But you know what? My counterpoint is that I'm not sure you want that really to some degree, because the more clear you are about exactly what it, like if you break it down to a formula, then you become a lot more intractable in terms of
you want to have it fluid and let the players create the story of what happened.
A little bit.
One thing I really loved after I think my first play of this game when I played
Your list?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. It's my number three.
Oh, okay.
I think this is incredibly innovative. I think the reason I love all these games, it's hard to choose your favorite child here. I had some quibbles with some of the tiny little mechanics here and there. I don't think they're really that important, but I do remember like the thing I really loved is when I lost as the capital class, and I almost felt like this is a moment where I'm coming home from school and I'm explaining to my dad, like, why didn't I win? It's like, well, I failed to control foreign trade. And so, the other classes were able to purchase goods, you know, healthcare and other goods and food from foreign sources. And so they were not paying the premium for the goods that I was producing as part of the capitalist class, which sounded like, oh, that totally makes sense. Like this was a very coherent narrative of why I did not win the game, and that's the level of considerations of like, I was playing a pretty good game, I think, but I did fail to control foreign trade. And
that's cool that your strategy failed because of an actual real world thing that would have also failed.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also there's like now having played this game several times, there really is like a huge amount of depth in terms of the experience. So I played the state in this recent game, and like one of the criticisms about the state is that you actually have way fewer options than the other factions, and you know, but I found here I was playing the state and it was like a completely different game for me. Like different things were happening and I had to deal with things in different ways. I wasn't able to do my events and like I had to play the game differently, and I was like, wow, this is a game that just keeps on providing new experiences for
me. I crushed as the state, but it is one of those things where when you crush as the state, people realize, oh, the state's winning. And why is the state winning? Because the state's gameplay is to figure out ways to get points by helping everybody else. Right. And eventually you get to this point where, you know, I could really help out that problem you got there. I got exactly the thing. Nope, I don't want it. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. To say no to the gifts.
Back away, government.
Yeah. Well, then they were trying to sink me because I was doing well. But Forrest, who is the working class player, he had moved a lot of the policies towards a more socialist society, which was good for him at the end game. And so he knew that if I failed, all his hard work and moving policies in one direction would be negated. So it was in his best interest to keep me solvent. So he kept on buying influence for me as a state, which gave me lots of money, but also gave him influence in elections. It was just like this fascinating, you know, evolving game state that like created strange, interesting alliances. It was like, you know, it's these are all the reasons I feel bad, because I have personally talked about this game way too much. And I feel bad that here I go again. But it's for all these reasons that for me, it was a clear number one, even though there are certain games I actually just almost want to play more than Hegemony. But I feel like this is why this game.
Yeah, this is probably not a 10 times a year.
For me, it's a close number one, but it is a game that much like, you know, Die Macher, I got to play it once a year minimum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I got to play it once a year.
The game you were talking about where you want us to stay. So for using Paul's standard for games that create memories, that's his standard for like things. Like the game you played to stay, you know, that did produce our narrative moment of the year. let's go in the Wayback Machine, because this was this is the you crossed the line, mate.
That's right.
Moment where Mike and Dimitri are playing, and you're doing very well as the state, and Mike, very late in the game, is finally realizing the error of his ways and how he may have handed the victory to you, and Dimitri just couldn't help but say, maybe this is something you should have considered a long time ago.
and Mike took
class warfare at his
correct
finest.
Umbrage at that, and was like, you crossed the line, mate. No, that's not okay. It was a very sweet little blow up that we had. That was adorable.
It was like
and really
a,
fun.
A begging card across the table and having it softly.
Even better.
No, that cut his cornea is what it was.
All right, so Hegemony, Game Brains.
I'm really surprised.
I think it's really cool that it's number one. This is an extremely innovative game. It's really cool.
Yeah.
This is the kind of game where, like, someone who doesn't know our hobby well, like, I would want them to know about this. It's
yes.
Blow
very
mind.
Accessible.
And
very
easily accessible. Missed by a lot of people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the year as a whole?
I think... I'm hard-pressed to think of a better year overall in terms of just...
Seems super deep.
How
right?
many games came out this year that I feel like I'll be playing in 5-10 years? Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. I just guarantee you Age of Innovation and Earthborn Rangers are games I'm going to be playing for years. I just guarantee it. There's no chance I won't be.
I think it was a great year for reprints, reissues, reduxes. So, obviously... The Rich and the Good. I think if I could have included that would have been my number three.
Here we go.
He got it in.
He got it in.
No, because
he made it happen.
But it was. But that's not
the
only one.
I like it also very much. Yeah.
To me, that was an easy number three. I think also you have a Tragedy Looper, the new Tragedies, a cleaner new version with new mysteries.
Still haven't played it.
Tragedy Looper. We have to play.
I play the game. I haven't played the new one.
Tragedy Looper, I think, is a phenomenal game. Talk about innovative. I think it's great, and I love this new edition of it. You also have a new Zhang Guo. It's like back, and there's a new module. I haven't even gotten to play it yet, but that's cool. And then we just the other night got to play Brussels 1893, the reprint of that, which was super fun. And like, how great to play that game. That game is amazing. So a lot of really great games brought back from, you know.
But that's like, a reprint, right?
Reprint.
Well, it's with a new expansion.
New expansion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But like older games getting like a time in the spotlight.
And yet this year might also have the biggest disappointment that I've experienced probably in 5 years or so as far as a game. Love Carl Chudik, but a GNC, wow. That one did not work for me.
I don't want to go negative at the end here, but
I don't want to, but you know, we're just covering the year as a general.
That was definitely top three most excited games of the year. The other two are on my list, Age of Innovation and Voidfall were the other two games I was most excited for this year. Yeah, and those are the three.
I thought I was going to love Voidfall. I really did.
Yeah. I will say this. This is not a reprint, but it's a game I played late in the year that I fell in love with and has occupied a lot of my brain space, and I just actually want to play it over and over and over again. It's Marrakesh by Stefan Feld. I am smitten. I love it. I just want to play it and go. It's like with Evacuation. I just want to do it again and again and just get better at this area and do better. I absolutely love it.
And we
it.
May be talking about some of the games that are here on our list that are really low of, because like, you know, people haven't played Rats of Wistar really. Yeah. People haven't played Earthborn Rangers. Like that. We could be looking at the end of next year and saying, oh, it's too bad these don't qualify.
Yeah.
Marrakesh.
Marrakesh was a 2022 game, which is why it does not qualify, but only discovered
Queen
it.
Queen games are weird because it takes them so long to get over here.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're done.
That was my favorite.
I think we are. Are we ready for anything?
Yeah. We've got nothing else to say.
Let's just end by saying a couple things. Let's just end by saying, first of all, thank you to everybody that submitted to the contest. I was not exaggerating when I think it touched a lot of us. It touched a lot of us. It meant a lot to hear that. And to that end, thank you to everybody that listens to this podcast. We do this, and you know, year in, year out, we don't do it as often as we used to. I think we did like 30 episodes last year instead of, you know, 40 or 50. But we really, really, it means so much to us when like Trey and I go to a convention and we keep running into people that are, that are fans and really enjoy and feel like they know us. That's the best part of it, is that they feel like they're not just talking to somebody that they don't know, that they feel like they understand us a little bit. It makes the hobby feel even more of a community than it already does. And it's really awesome. Thank you, everybody.
No, I agree. It gives you a lot of energy. Like, I'm so happy to see all the entries here and what you're saying, like, you know, we did about 30 episodes last year, but like that's all we could really do.
Yeah,
like, but I think without the fans, we wouldn't do it.
Correct.
At this point, so
exactly. Thanks, everybody, and here's to a wonderful 2024.
You've been listening to Game Brain, produced and edited by Matthew Robinson, Tom Donnelly, Ben Mandelker, and Trey Alsop. Thanks to Edamaros Peleg for our art. Check him out at kerberloney.com. And thanks to Daedalus for our incredible music. You know them as Alfred. More on Daedalus at gamebrainpod.com. You can reach us by email at contact@gamebrainpod.com. Thanks for listening, and go play some games with friends. Or go make some friends with games.